We're trying to round up the House members, and so we're going to go ahead and start the hearing and work session on Senate Bill 875. Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I think the best way to proceed today would be to walk you through the engrossed version of Senate Bill 875, and we'll also be using the dash A11 amendment to this bill. This morning, we handed out to your offices copies of the A11 amendment and the engrossed bill of 875, as well as a fiscal impact statement. And that gives you somewhat of a summary. I have extra copies if you need it. So if you'd like, I can
start walking us through.
Let's start with the engrossed Senate Bill 875, and then I'll, when we get to the place where the amendment takes over, I will point that out to all of you. Section 1 of the bill, Section 1, Sub 1, are some definitions of pharmacy benefit manager, prescription drug claims processor, and the program price. Sub 2 establishes the Oregon Prescription Drug Program within the Oregon Department of Administrative Services and lays out the purposes of this program: to purchase prescription drugs or reimburse pharmacies for prescription drugs in order to receive discounted prices and rebates, make prescription drugs available at the lowest possible cost to participants in the program, and to maintain a list of prescription drugs recommended as the most effective prescription drugs available at the best possible prices. Sub 3 directs the department or the director of the Department of Administrative Services to hire an administrator for this program. And at the top of page 2, lines 2 through 13 lay out the duties of the administrator. I won't read them all, but they are to negotiate price discounts, purchase prescription drugs for participants, contract with a prescription drug claims processor, determine program prices, adopt and implement a preferred drug list, develop a system for allocating and distributing the operational costs of the program, cooperate with other states or regional consortia in the bulk purchase of prescription drugs. Sub 4 down, let's see, beginning on lines 14 down through line 28, describe the following individuals or entities who may participate in the program. These would include local governments, the Public Employees Benefit Board, enrollees in the Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program, which is a program that was created during the last session, Oregon Health Sciences University, and then beginning on line 23, residents of the state who are more than 54 years of age, have a gross annual income that does not exceed 185% of the federal poverty guidelines, and have not been covered under any private prescription drug benefit program for the previous 6 months. Lines 29 and 30 stipulate that DHS cannot participate in this program. Moving on down further, there are some restrictions on the contract that the administrator of this particular program may not, for example, on line 37, contract with a pharmacy benefit manager except as provided in the next section, which we'll look at in a second. The administrator may not establish a state-managed wholesale or retail drug distribution or dispensing system, and they may not require pharmacies to maintain or allocate separate inventories. Subsection 9, the administrator shall contract with one or more entities to provide the functions of a prescription drug claims processor. And the administrator may also contract with a pharmacy benefit manager to negotiate with prescription drug manufacturers on behalf of the administrator. On page 3 begins Section 2. Section 2 describes how application is made to participate in the program. Section 3 requires the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research to develop and recommend to the Department of Administrative Services a preferred drug list that identifies preferred choices of prescription drugs within therapeutic classes for particular diseases and conditions and for use in this particular program. And then, beginning on line 21, the A11 amendment would insert some language on line 21 after the period, the prescription drug purchasing fund shall consist of monies appropriated to the fund by the Legislative Assembly and monies received by DAS for the purposes established in this section in the form of gifts, grants, bequests, endowments, or donations. In line 32, instead of the word program, we've got Oregon Prescription Drug Program. And in line 35, we have the addition of $198,398. And this is to pay for the administrator of this particular program. So there is a general fund appropriation included in the A11 amendment. Then Section 7 of the A engrossed bill is completely deleted, and in its place is Section 7 on the A11 amendment. It requires that the Department of Administrative Services no later than September 30th, 2004, to report to the appropriate interim legislative committee and to the emergency board on the department's preparations to implement the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, and then lays out some components of that report. So one way to look at the invest or the $198,000 is as an investment for someone to really investigate the feasibility of implementing this particular program.
Can you ask a question on that statement?
Senator Carter.
I was just looking at the chair and was saying to the board, I'm sorry if my material is. But when it would say, it would be determined who would get the drugs. Is that determination not set? Does this bill correlate at all with Oregon Health Plan, where it would be dealing with standard population people, or is there any connectors?
Madam Chair and Senator Carter, this bill particularly says that members who are OHP standard or members of the health plan or eligible for the health plan are not participants in this whatsoever.
Okay.
Now, one thing to say is that the people who are eligible, and it's specified in 875 who's eligible to participate, mirrors and includes the senior prescription drug people, which is a program that already exists.
Okay.
So they're eligible for this as well.
Okay.
What are the differences in what we did last session with the senior drug program that we implemented and this particular in 875?
Madam Chair and members, the senior prescription drug program, as I understand it, allows participants in that program to buy retail drugs at the Medicaid price in voluntarily participating pharmacies. What's envisioned here, I believe, is the fact that through bulk purchasing and hard negotiation, that price could even be improved upon or lowered.
So the intent is to try to provide lower cost of pharmaceutical drugs for the senior population.
Madam Chair, that's one of the purposes of this program as laid out in this bill.
Senator Gorder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the language in the bill, Section 3 on page 3, and the requirement for the Oregon Health Policy and Research Office to develop a preferred drug list, et cetera. I'm not going to read everything that's there. I have a request And that is, I just handed to Dr. Goldberg a report from the National Medical Association. It was a report that was issued in November of 2002, Madam Chair. And it's titled Cultural and Genetic Diversity in America, The Need for Individualized Pharmaceutical Treatment. And that report carries several recommendations focused on looking at policy and looking at the implementation of practices that will better serve or make sure that the individual needs of cultural groups are taken into account. I'm not requesting a budget note or an amendment to a bill or anything like that, but I am asking Dr. Goldberg or someone from that office to at least acknowledge that they will look at the issues, look at the report, come back and tell us what in the report has application to the policy that's contained in Senate Bill 875 as we move forward.
Dr. Goldberg, would you like to respond to Senator Gordley?
For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Administrator of the Office of Health Policy. Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I just had the opportunity to read only the page of the recommendations, not the full report, but this report makes sound recommendations for the kind of policy the state would want. I mean, what this calls for is to implement cost containment practices that are broad and flexible, to have an opportunity so that physicians can provide individualized treatment, taking into account racial, ethnic, and sociocultural influences. It calls for pharmaceutical companies to be certain to have representation from various racial and ethnic groups in clinical trials. I think all these things are the kinds of things that make for sound policy and are the kinds of things that, while not stated in Senate Bill 875, can certainly be the sorts of things that one would hope would become part of the program that is adopted. And I think that what this bill does is call for an opportunity to bulk and cooperative purchasing. It doesn't sort of talk about the ways in which the rules would be established by which that would occur. But I sit before you today to say that this is good policy and should be the types of things that are part of a program.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just appreciate the opportunity to put that onto the record, and again, in absence of there being any specific explicit language in the bill. I'm thinking back to last session when we had, what was it, Senate Bill 819, and we did, we were more deliberate, I think, at that time in crafting language that was inclusive, that was explicit, that set out our intent and put that in policy. And again, we're not doing that right now, but I'm comfortable that we're putting onto record what our intent is through Dr. Goldberg's statements, and I thank you for allowing me to hand that to you on the way in. And
May I keep it and make a copy and get it back to you tomorrow, though?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Manager.
Mm-hmm. Any other question? Just comment. You know, last session we did pass legislation that could purchase through kind of a membership process that was managed by the Oregon Self Oregon State Health Science University. I don't know about the other members, but I know that I receive probably one of the biggest issues facing this state is the cost of prescription medication, and particularly relating to seniors, because they take more medication than those who are younger and haven't experienced the aging process. My file that I've received from my constituents is quite thick, asking to support Senate Bill 875 and to help to provide some relief for seniors. And I know that there's been a lot of work on this particular bill. And I'm surprised that so far I haven't heard from Representative Bates.
I'm keeping myself under control, Madam Chair.
And I know that everyone's had a tough couple of days, but hopefully that you have reviewed this, because my mail on this particular subject has been consistent on support for Senate Bill 875. So,
Madam Chair, this is a bill that obviously we've been watching all session. We're very happy to see it here in committee and coming up for vote today. It's something that opens up the possibility for many Oregonians who don't have prescription drug benefits to get their drugs at a reduced price to bulk purchasing. It's a good bill. I see there's amendments to which I've just seen for the first time, which look appropriate, and I think it's going to be an easy vote for most to get this on out.
My colleagues up here are thinking that I'm still hungry because today it's been quite an intense day, where some of us have had delayed lunches and maybe no lunch at all, and so they're giving me some messages up here with these skins and one peanut. And the message is, there is a price difference. You know, if you get it, if you're talking about, when you go to buy certain pharmaceuticals, if you're having to pay the full bore and we're not doing bulk purchasing, there is really a price difference when you go to purchase. I would agree with that. And I don't know. I like both the skin and peanuts. So thank you, Senator Carter. Oh, that was from Senator Gordley? Oh, we've been in this building too long, you guys. I will ask, because I know that if all of the stakeholder groups, and I see you in the audience, have worked on this, and if all are in agreement with this policy, I see probably every last one of you out there, and if I could see the nodding of heads of those of you who have worked on this, and whether or not you have any problem with the Dash 11 amendment. Good. Gosh, you mean we've got some agreement in this building? That's a good thing.
Yes.
With that, and if there's no further questions on this, I do have a letter that I would like to pass out to the committee that's from Aaron Kelly Seals, the policy advisor of Health and Human Services from the governor's office, who is sending a letter in support of Senate Bill.
Work session on that.
Let's move the bill.
Let's move it.
Do it. So we're in work session. We can move the amendments to this bill.
Okay. We'll leave it for now.
Yes.
I'm going to entertain a motion. Where's Senator Carter? Senator Carter.
Crying out loud. Get in here, babe.
I can be here. She can be here. We've just been dragged through the ringer.
Yes. That was me yesterday.
What happened?
You were there.
I was. I have traumatic memory loss.
Senator Martin, Senator Carter, since you have the peanut, would you please make the motion?
Okay. Ram.
Madam Chair, I move a House Senate Bill 875
to full voicing.
We have to do the
amendment first.
Okay. Madam Chair, move the amendment to House Bill 875.
Senator Carter moves the -11 amendment to Senate Bill 875. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
Move Senate Bill 875 to the full committee with the due class recommendation.
Senator Carter moves Senate Bill 875 as amended to full ways and means with the due pass recommendation. Are there any objections?
Not an objection, Madam Chair, but may I make a request that in the
pony
that the that there's a reference to the issue that the office will work on.
I believe John is noting that request.
Thank you.
And we do have one objection. Note that Representative Scott is an objection. Are there any further objections? Hearing none. So that's fine. Who would like to carry the house? Okay. Thank you very much. And thank all of you there who worked on this legislation. This is a huge step for Oregon. I don't know if individuals realize what was just passed here and the ability to do bulk purchasing for seniors in the state. And I had mentioned earlier, I was interviewed earlier today by Money Magazine, of all things, on the Oregon Health Plan. Nationally, they're looking at what we did to restructure this session. And I called, and so I mentioned that this was another piece that we were working on. So, you know, we continue in this state to, I think, to come up with policy to serve the needs of our citizens and at the same time of trying to make sure that we're being cost conscious, recognizing that particularly when you talk about prescriptions, that the population that we're talking about need a break. Sometimes it's between whether or not they eat or whether they take their medication. And so I think I'm going to thank all of you for your support. And with that, we're on to the next one. We're going to have a work session. We're not going to have a hearing on House Bill 3624. We will not do a work session today, but we will save that for tomorrow. But so that we'll start walking through House Bill 3624. Just a little background history. House Bill 3624 was the bill that came over from the House that was in Representative then Westland's committee, and Representative Bates and Representative Cruz worked on it extensively, and it was then sent to the Senate, where co-chaired by Senator Winters and Courtney and Senator Carter was also involved in it. So there's a lot of work that has gone in House Bill 3624, and I think some of us thought that it was going to never arrive.
That's right.
And it has finally arrived in Ways and Means. So we're going to walk through it today. I would ask you to be prepared tomorrow evening to go into work session on House Bill 3624. So some do not realize that we do take work home at night. From this building, and if we're going to get all of our work done, and that's the only way it can be done. So I would appreciate it if you would do that so we can be prepared to work session this tomorrow. Bring all your questions tomorrow.
What time would you expect us to meet tomorrow?
It'll be probably late afternoon tomorrow.
You have to get back from the presidential
meeting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we've got some bills on the floor. So as those of you know now, we're in the stretch, thank goodness, of where we can do late meetings to get out of this building. Mr. Britton.
Gotta get your hand back there.
We want this bill to be 52, you know. Where's the original that we're taking?
And for the okay. for the audience, just so you know, hopefully tomorrow we will also have on the docket House Bill 2511.
This is it?
Which is the companion piece to House Bill 3624. So, Mr. Britton, if you would walk us through,
okay.
I'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I've handed out two things to you and the members. The first is House Bill 3624B42 amendment. So this would be an amendment, the 42nd amendment, to the B. Engross version of the bill. The other thing I handed out was a draft fiscal impact statement that Monica Brown and I worked up for the B40 amendments. And the B40 and the B42 differ in some respects, but by and large, the summary that is included in the fiscal impact statement for the B40 will help us walk through this bill, at least to give you an overview section of most of the sections that have a fiscal impact in any case. So if you look at the front page of the fiscal impact statement, these are, for the most part, the fiscal impacts that were submitted to us by both the Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Human Services. You'll notice that the subtotal for general fund, the cost for this measure for the Department of Human Services, is $315,769 for the 2003-05 biennium. Other funds are $100,000. You'll note that down below under revenues, there is a donation that has been offered of other funds through Kaiser Permanente of $100,000. And under federal funds, these are federal matching funds that would match, I believe, both the other fund contribution as well as the general fund. For the Department of Administrative Services, there is a cost, and when we get to that cost, you'll be able to see that, but this is associated with the hiring of an actuary to do some independent actuarial work on the rates that are paid to managed care providers and fee-for-service providers, $275,000 of general fund, which can then be matched with $275,000 of federal funds. It's labeled as other funds here because that's how it would be spent within the Department of Administrative Services. They would receive federal funds from DHS. With that, I would propose that we just start walking through this. Under general comments on the second page, we note that the bill would modify several provisions of the Oregon Health Plan, including but not limited to requiring participants to enroll in a managed care plan with certain exceptions, directing the Department of Human Services to contract with a fully capitated health plan to provide administrative services for fee-for-service clients, contracting with a pharmacy benefit manager, requiring the Health Services Commission to retain an actuary to determine benchmark rates for capitated health plans and fee-for-service providers. So those are some of the general things that this bill would do. We note here that the costs outlined in the table on the first page reflect only the estimated startup and administrative costs. There is a potential for additional costs and savings in the future, but they are unknown at this time. Section 2 of the bill, and we'll go on to Section 4 in a moment, but I wanted to point out, includes a number of definitions of designated areas related to where fully capitated health plans serve the population, physician care organization, prepaid managed care health services organization, a number of definitions in Section 2. Section 3 lays out the exemptions for those who must be enrolled in managed care. For example, the exemptions are those person who is a non-citizen and who is eligible only for labor and delivery services and emergency treatment services, person who is an American Indian and Alaskan Native beneficiary. There are a number of them right here in within Section 3 that provide exemptions to those who have to be enrolled in managed care. The fiscal impact statement talks about managed care in Section 4, and this is a major point of this particular bill. To the greatest extent possible, the Department of Human Services is directed to use prepaid managed care organizations to provide services to enrollees in the Oregon Health Plan for services funded by the Legislative Assembly. Sections 5 and 6 discuss the physician care organizations. These are known as PCOs, and lays out the requirement that if DHS is unable to contract with a fully capitated health plan, it may contract with a PCO, a physician care organization, after the department considers criteria developed by the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research within the Department of Administrative Services. Section 6 specifically requires DHS to contract with a prepaid group practice health plan that serves at least 200,000 members in this state and that has been issued a certificate of authority by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. You'll note throughout this fiscal impact statement, and I would hope that you could read it overnight, that in some instances there is a reported cost, but it would also note that in some instances that those costs have already been addressed in the DHS budget bill, and others have not. The ones on the front page, for the most part, have not been addressed in House Bill 5030. This bill, or the B-42 amendment, does appropriate $275,000 for the independent actuary, but it does not fund the general fund costs for the Department of Human Services.
Yeah, stop that.
Section 7 in the amendment, back on the B-42 amendment, also talks about the services required by federal law, and it amends existing statutes. It also lays out other particular services, and this matches up to House Bill 2511 as it's currently configured. We are aware of the fact that House Bill 2511 may change between now and tomorrow, and this bill needs to match up to whatever it is that we ultimately decide with respect to House Bill 2511. But right now it does, but if we're going to change 2511, then we also need to change 3624. Section 9 on the fiscal impact statement directs the Health Services Commission to retain an actuary. This is the cost of $275,000 general fund that I mentioned just a moment ago. And that actuary is to develop benchmarks for setting per capita rates necessary to reimburse managed care organizations and fee-for-service providers for the costs of providing health care. And this actuary is to report findings to the Department of Administrative Services, DHS, and the Legislative Fiscal Office by August 1st of every even-numbered year. DHS, in that particular section, reports that the estimated cost to implement the provisions associated with Section 9 are about $219,000 of general fund. And again, that's embedded within the cost that's laid out for you on the first page. Sections 10 and 10A, the bill requires DHS to contract with fully capitated health plans to provide administrative services for fee-for-service clients for prescription drugs, excluding mental health drugs, inpatient and outpatient hospital services, non-emergency medical transportation, and durable medical equipment and supplies. We've noted in our fiscal here that there's some speculation that savings could be achieved by having the fully caps provide administrative management of the services that fee-for-service clients receive, but the extent of those savings is not unknown at this time. But I think that the point of this particular section is to say that some management through the fully capitated health plans of the services that fee-for-service clients receive is better than limited management or the management that is currently being done by the Department of Human Services. Section 11, the department may not include mental health drugs under capitation contracts and must reimburse pharmacy providers at the fee-for-service payment basis. We've noted that there's no additional fiscal for this provision as it codifies current practice. Section 12 talks about or discusses contracts between fully capitated health plans and hospitals and states that if a contract is not in place, these two entities are required to pay and accept, respectively, 92.5% of the actuarially determined rates for the statewide average cost-to-charge ratio as modified by the geographic and payment discount factors. This was a way to arbitrate contract disputes, I believe, between the fully capitated health plans and the hospitals. And the provisions here do not apply to type A and B hospitals and rural critical access hospitals. Sections 12A and 12B, mail order pharmacy, a fully capitated health plan or partial cap or physician care organization that offers the option of obtaining prescription drugs through a mail order pharmacy may use the same provider as DHS. Prescription benefit manager is a discussion through sections 13, 14, and 15. The bill requires the department to contract with a pharmacy benefit manager for two programs. One, to purchase drugs for or reimburse fully capitated health plans, and one, to reimburse fee-for-service pharmacy providers. DHS noted in its fiscal to us that if its current vendor is selected, the implementation costs for these provisions would be minimal, but if a new vendor was awarded this contract, the department anticipates the costs of converting its exiting systems would be about $423,000, which includes $106,000 general fund.
Would the new vendor want to absorb that?
And Madam Chair and members, I don't know the answer to that particular question. It's an idea.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I was getting ready to ask the same question you asked, and that was, if a new vendor was bidding for this, would they be interested in picking up that cost as part of their bid? And could that be made a part of the request for proposal? And I suppose we should ask Lynn Reed to come up and answer that question if she can. It would be acceptable, Chair.
Mm-hmm. That's what?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lynn Reed, Administrator with the Office of Medical Assistance Programs in the Department of Human Services. And I'm not a contracting expert, but I would also think that we would be able to put something into the request for a proposal that would address that. Or it could be, depending upon, we have an amount built into our budget for the current contractor. It may be that bids would be come in at less than that, which would also allow for some funding in order to bridge moving to a new vendor.
Yeah, I would think that prudency would say that you would in your RFP you would want them to come under, you know, the amount so that you're not having to absorb those transference costs.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, one of the requirements under this section and several sections are that it be cost neutral to the department, and at least in terms of the ongoing operation. So the cost of these components of the bill will be very important to us to monitor and make sure that we're indeed doing that within the framework of the budget.
Thank you. Just a
quick comment, Madam Chair. Lynn, thank you for answering the question. Obviously, we don't want you tied to one vendor on the basis of the software you need to maintain. But at the same time, these are very complex transactions, and I realize they're expensive. I would hope that if that RFP went out, that would be part of the statement in the RFP, that if you want this contract and you don't have the contract now, that you'll have to bid at a level that allows us to make those changes either at neutral cost or that the vendor steps up and does it. These are big contracts. They have significant amounts of money, and I'm hoping other vendors would step forward to make that offer.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates will certainly take that into consideration in developing an RFP. And the only thing I hadn't shared with you previously is that right now we're working with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services on the procurement for a new Medicaid management information system. One of the things they're interested in bringing under that procurement is this function. And so it is possible also that it will ultimately be folded into to that RFP process, and that a vendor will have to flow from that process that would do this function as well. That may be a condition of moving forward with 90% matching money from the federal government.
Sure.
Madam Chair, may I want me to continue? Section 18, the requirement to contract for administrative services and a prescription benefit manager are subject to receiving a waiver from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Sections 20 and 21 deal with prior authorization. The department is authorized to require prior authorization for those clients whose prescription drug use exceeded 15 drugs in the preceding six-month period. Section 22, I want to make sure, states that the department may not adopt or amend any rule that requires a prescribing practitioner to contact the department to request an exemption for medically appropriate or medically necessary drug that is not listed on the practitioner-managed prescription drug plan drug list for that class of drugs adopted under ORS 414. We note at the end of our fiscal, well, before I go to that, the $275,000 appropriation is in Section 24 of the B42 amendment. We note in the concluding remarks on our fiscal impact statement that we are uncertain about some of the estimates submitted by the department, and also we do not have really any sense of the magnitude of potential savings from contracting out for administrative services for the fee-for-service clients, or from obtaining supplemental rebates from pharmaceutical manufacturers, which are both provisions of this particular bill.
Madam Chair,
Senator Carter.
Do you mind if I ask Ms. Reed a question?
Lynn, come up. Stay up, Lynn.
Thank you. Ms. Reed, under preferred drug list section 22 that Don was just referring to, I'm wondering what would be the effects of culturally specific kind of drug with us trying to understand the new research that speaks to the issue of many people of color not being able to take a standard medication. How would this piece affect your trying to do something about that?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I don't know that it has any direct impact. What this does is, as a piece of the budget reductions that took place during this past year, one of the things that we did as a budget measure was to have an enhanced authorization process associated with the preferred drug list. Mm-hmm. And what this does is take away that. And so it puts it back to being a more permissive environment so that the physician, the prescriber, can just write "do not substitute," for example, right on the prescription drug. So it puts it back between the prescriber and the patient more directly. But
puts us back to 819.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, just to make a comment on the same issue. The real problem, I believe, for getting medications properly to patients of minority groups is one of educating physicians, myself included. And, you know, when we went through medical school, that was never a discussion. It's now becoming a discussion. Mm-hmm. And focusing on in the legislature on that is helpful. It's helpful. It won't solve the problem, but it's helpful. The real problem has to be dealt with medical schools and continuing education. We're just starting to learn that there's huge differences in how different populations not only respond to certain drugs, but the incidence and severity of certain illnesses, such as diabetes, hypertension, stroke, and heart attacks. So I appreciate your comments, knowing that we won't solve it here, but we can get a start.
I think you're correct that it is a form of education, particularly at the med school level and also among our population, because I think even the groups themselves don't understand that they can take certain drugs and it has an adverse effect. You know, it's kind of we look at the body as the same, and yet we recognize each other as unique individuals. And I think as we talk about these various medical procedures, I think we have to take that into mind, too. So you're right. In fact, I didn't know it until I went to a health conference on diabetes and hypertension. And the doctor there who was talking to us was the one that highlighted it for us that there are certain medications that African Americans cannot take that have an adverse effect. And I suspect that's true with other ethnic groups, which reminds me then of the book Eat Right for Your Blood Type, because I think there's probably more studies now that are taking place that looks at the various blood typing and what that really means for our bodies. So we're learning a lot more than what we knew in the past. But the uniqueness of each individual, I think, is key. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Go ahead, Mr. Britton. I think members would like to...
Yeah, for me.
What I would like to for tomorrow, when we convene the session, two things. One, have your questions ready. But two, I think just in case there's any tweaking that we'd need, I'd like to have Holly, if you can have her available, if we have to make any conceptual changes to it so that we're not held up in passing this legislation out. We've had 8 months. And I think today we all realize that we are in August and we need to get some of this landmark, and this is landmark legislation, passed and through the chamber. So tomorrow we will convene here at 3:30. We will plan to work session House Bill 3624, and also if we've got the technical changes that we need for House Bill 2511 to do that one as well, so that we can get those two major pieces of legislation signed bill. I haven't heard that one yet, but I understand that's under discussion.
Okay, great.
So, Representative Bates.
Just a couple statements real quick, if I could, Madam Chair. One, just so people have a general overview of this thing, 3624 really tries to move this population as much as possible to managed care, not only as individuals, but for services they might get outside of managed care, because we know that managed care does save money and improve access for these individuals. There is some initial startup cost to making those changes, but long-term there should be substantial savings and better care for the individuals, and that's the whole thrust of this legislation. The other thing I'd like to say is we're going to try to get a small group together tomorrow for those who might be interested and do a line-by-line to this as we've done before. We don't want to pass something out that is this complex, has unexpected consequences in it. I'm going to ask Holly and Rick if they can get together with us, and maybe Barney or anybody else who's interested. And I don't know what time we'll be doing it, but we're going to have a quick floor session tomorrow morning. And then a lot of the members will be going to see the president. Others won't. And those who might have time might like to sit down. Just go through it for one last look to make sure we don't have a mistake here or something we're not expecting. Just looking through it very quickly, it looks pretty good to me.
Well, like I said, this was 8 months of evolution.
Yes.
And
babies are 9 months. We're close.
We know some arrive in 8.
And they have problems with premature.
That's what happens when you're docs. If we have no further business, we are adjourned.